6% of adults age 22 through 38, if I'm getting that statistic right, I think it's 6% of adults in that range have had any kind of arts education in their public school. So we're going to have to find ways to reach out to people that don't know the value of theater. Don't assume, I should say, the value of theater.
Hi, and welcome to The State of Shakespeare. I'm Jim Elliott.
And I'm Garrett Vandermeer.
And today on the program, we have the Epic Theater Ensemble, represented by Ron Russell, the executive director, and Jim Wallert, the associate artistic director. Jim is also starring as Richard III in their upcoming production of Richard III, Born with Teeth. Hi, guys.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. Can you tell us a little bit about the Epic Theater Ensemble?
Yeah, sure. Jim and I are actually co-founders. In fact, we co-founded Epic with several other folks back in 2001. In fact, our first official day of work, we all quit our jobs at the same time because we founded Epic as a working theater where we were getting paid from day one. So our first official day of work was Tuesday, September 11th, 2001.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, the events of that day were more important than the founding of Epic, but it was very informative to where Epic went immediately, because Epic's mission is about using theater to empower people's voices and to foster civic dialogue on important issues of our day. And after that day, we really worked hard to get into schools right away. We had always planned on having education programs, but we worked hard on getting into schools and community centers that were directly affected right away and forged a sort of a new way of making theater with youth. And that's been the driving force behind the development of our mission and our programs. Although Born with Teeth is, you know, a full off-Broadway production that will reach both adult and student audiences, a huge amount of our audiences are students. Probably half of the people who see the show are going to be high school and college students from non-arts departments. These aren't like theater kids. They're kids from a wide spectrum of youth.
How did you get to the point where you could quit your jobs and start working for your own theater company? Tell us a little bit about that process.
Sure. Melissa Friedman and I, my wife and Epic's artistic director, sat down in the year 2000 and said, you know, there's a big gap in this city of artists who are working as teaching artists for companies that they're not able to be on the stages of. Basically, if you take your average off-Broadway theater, there's a division between who works on the stage of the off-Broadway theater and who works in the classrooms.
Sure.
In fact, teaching artists often find themselves unable to get auditions for the people that they're already working for. So our concept was, what if we create a company that is, you know, the artists are our stock and trade 100%. The artists are the same artists in our classrooms that are on our off-Broadway stages that are developing new work. And we invited about 30 people to come to a series of living room discussions to talk about what it would take to found a theater like this. And we just talked about what everybody could bring to the table.
Right.
So our final budget for that year was closing in on $280,000.
Wow.
For our first year.
Oh, that's really inspiring for a year's work.
Yeah, it was cool. We didn't get paid what we expected.
Isn't that always the case?
So your company began with a mission of outreach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the work that we develop and the writers that we work with, we've moved in the last few years to, in addition to our Shakespeare programming, we're sort of fully commission-based in our new play development. We commission writers to write plays for our company and for our audiences. And the focus of all of that work really is for reaching new audiences, people for whom, you know, in terms of Born with Teeth, we're going to have hundreds of audience members for whom this is their first experience with Shakespeare, but it's also going to be their first experience coming to a play. And so that's really all of the work that we're developing, all of the artists that we're choosing to work with, you know, all of the artistic decisions are really kind of informed with this idea of trying to create an atmosphere that really connects with audiences and makes them feel welcome and makes them feel like they're in the right room. They're in their home.
And you get them up on their feet acting as well, of course, don't you?
Sure, in our school programs and our after school programs, absolutely. Our after school and in school programs are very in-depth residencies where we work with kids across an entire grade. It's not self-selected. I mean, our after school programs obviously have an element of self-selection, and you know, all the work we do culminates in some form of performance. It's not all fully staged. Some of it looks more like what we would call in our world a reading, table reading, or a staged reading. But it's always, there's always an eye to professional authenticity of what students create, produce, and ultimately, you know, in our larger programs, stage. You know, we serve anywhere between 1,500 and 2,500 students per year.
I imagine there must be some fascinating discoveries that you make as artists working with these students.
Yeah, it's been really amazing. This particular year in our after-school Shakespeare program, Shakespeare Remix, we chose to work on the Henry VI plays. We were directing these student ensembles of 30, 40, you know, in Ron's case, I think you have upwards of almost 50 in the ensemble,
kids, yeah.
On these plays, which are the prequel to Richard III. And it's really been phenomenal, you know, because a lot of times as an actor, I, you know, or as an audience member, I've seen Richard III, but I was not as familiar with those Henry VI plays. And Richard III is so much more rich. You understand the context from which Richard and all of these other characters come from, this sort of world of civil war and the War of the Roses. And so it's been amazing to work with schools on those plays. And then the other thing that's fantastic is that all of those students that not only worked on those plays and their peers that saw those plays are going to come in and see our production of Born with Teeth.
We actually do in-school rehearsals, and we just did one at Urban Assembly for the Performing Arts in Harlem, which means that basically what we do is we pick some scenes that we're in the middle of actually rehearsing. We take a rehearsal day and say, okay, we're working on this scene between Lady Anne and Richard, and we've got some ideas about the staging of it. We've got some ideas about how it works, but what we're going to do is we're going to work on it in a school classroom and have the kids in their English classes act as assistant directors. And we stage it with their thoughts. We take their ideas and try out what they, how they think it should work. And it is just absolutely fascinating. And it really informs the actor's process. I mean, it was one of those amazing times when the scene finally was sort of performed all the way through by the actors after the kids had staged it. It was just utterly like triumphant. The kids were literally jumping out of their seats and screaming. And it was like one of those things where you feel like, oh, well, okay, great. We almost don't have to do this off Broadway.
Why Born with Teeth?
The title or the play itself?
Well, both, but first the title.
Why change the title was that I think that Epic is known for doing new plays. Insofar as people know us as a company, you're going to look back at plays like No Child and Hannah and Martin and these plays that we, you know, won Obies for and things like that, and say, okay, that's the history of Epic, is producing new plays, many of which we commission. So when we did Shakespeare last year, it felt like our mission was shifting, that somehow our mission of using theater to promote social dialogue and civic dialogue was maybe shifting to more just an interest in producing Shakespeare aesthetically. I don't think a lot of people think of Shakespeare as a political playwright.
Right.
So we at Epic do. We think he's kind of one of the main ones, you know, he and Sophocles and Aeschylus and Shaw and, you know what I mean, some of these guys, that they're the people who created political theater. And so for us, we wanted to make sure that people didn't get thrown by the title, I guess. Jim, where did you come up with the title?
Well, Born with Teeth is, it's actually a quote from one of the Henry VI plays. I think it was Henry VI, right before he is murdered by Richard in Henry VI, Part 3, curses him and talks about that from the moment you were born, you know, we knew that you were going to do no good. You know, the midwife cried that you were born with teeth. And I think it's so important for these plays, for this play, Richard III, to know the backstory, to know the context where these characters are emerging from. You know, you need to know. So often when you see Richard III and you see that the scene where Clarence is murdered, you know, you can sort of view that scene and think, oh, that poor guy. He's so innocent. He just never saw it coming. He never, whatever. Until you think that, yeah, a few months ago, he stabbed and murdered a kid. He betrayed his family. You know, this is not a good guy. And yeah. And actually, no one in the play is good.
Yeah,
you know, and they are emerging from this world of civil war, brutal violence, and an absolute lack of empathy. I really feel like those plays, especially working on them with students, I really feel like those Henry VI plays are his exploration of a world without empathy.
Yeah.
And what that might look like. And Ron's adaptation of Born with Teeth includes several scenes from Henry VI, so the audience is actually getting to see some of that context and some of that backstory in the production.
So when an audience member comes to see an Epic Theater Ensemble production for the first time, What is the first clue that this experience is going to be something unique?
Well, I hope that it's a sense about the level of engagement or the why of engagement. With new plays that we're presenting, it often comes down to content, that the content is sort of front and center. This is a play that is about you, and we've built it for you, and we're glad you're here because you're here to engage in the conversation. Epic has always, I mean, since day one, we've always done a post-show conversation after every show. And that is a very interactive post-show conversation. It's not about the actors coming out and saying, what'd you think? It's, you know, using special guests who are experts in topic areas that impact the social and political relevance of the play. More and more, we've been moving into more like panels where there's three guests who have very different opinions about a particular issue. Let's say, like, how language is used in political manipulation today, connected to Richard III. Everyone knows that's going to happen at the end. We have an amazing high retention rate for our post-show discussions. And more our post-show discussions are becoming interactive in that it's not just about the panel, but the audience is actually asked before the panel to discuss a question amongst themselves. And then I guess the other thing I would say that's really important to us and that we've used all the time is humor. We're very strong believers in the role that comedy plays in elucidating historical or political issues. So if you think about Born with Teeth, for instance, what we're planning, you know, when you come in, you're not even going to actually sit down right away. You're going to drink and you're going to walk around and actually meet the characters as if you are actually at this event. So you're actually going to kind of meet all of the players. Richard is going to be at the party, Richard III, but it's not very present. And the party is going to sort of degenerate into a drunken bacchanal where the scenes from Henry VI three are revealed, and then that's going to now is the winner of our discontent. So gotcha. There's going to be a high level of interaction from the very beginning, and hopefully it'll feel fun.
It must be interesting to engage the audience in that way, in the sense that anything could happen, and your actors have to be prepared for that.
That's a very good point.
That's the real plus of having the majority of the actors. They're kind of used to that level of spontaneity and having to roll and adjust with what an audience gives you. So
it sort of gets people in the mode of play acting a little bit right away, but in a comfortable way. We're not trying to make people improv, you know. It's more like they're part of the making of the essential content at the beginning of the play. And I think it's really important these days, if we want to remain competitive, that we flip this idea of like people coming in and finding their seats a little bit on its head. So when we talk about how does an audience feel, I hope that the first sense that they have is the buzz, not the buzz of like, I'm not going to get ready to be quiet. I guess what I mean is, we've been talking a lot about is how to engage people in, for instance, the use of their smartphones.
That antiquated notion that someone can distance themselves from their smartphone for more than 90 minutes. So, you know, we just need to own that.
Yeah.
And exactly. And find a way to turn it to our advantage. And,
you know, how do you actually create an environment where people can engage through that medium, which many people feel more comfortable engaging in? And yeah, I guess it comes down to this thing about authenticity. This is something that I talk a lot about diversity in the American theater as well, is that it's very, very important to Epic that we create authentic environments and authentic content. In other words, if you were to do Shakespeare and everybody was white and you were saying, well, you know, this is like today, this is like today's political milieu, but everybody was white, you'd sort of go immediately here in New York, certainly, you'd be like, no, that's not, that's clearly some other day. I just think the theater has to be more authentic.
To the era it is in.
To the now, yeah. That's, I think, something that we don't have the answers to when it comes down to things like the use of technology. We certainly don't know how to do it yet, but we are making an effort at Epic to think every day, like, well, how can we bridge that gap?
You know, our mission is all about dialogue and, you know, understanding that the way that dialogue is happening more and more is through these social media platforms. And we are a theater built on conversation. We better make sure that we're developing work where the conversations are happening that intersects with where people are having these conversations. And for a number of people, that's on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, what I find fascinating is that, you know, one of the things that I love about theater is that you're bringing people into the same room.
Yeah.
And you're having an experience together at the same moment. And so how you marry that with that image of a person sitting alone in his room is a really tough challenge, I imagine.
Yeah, it is difficult. And you're right that the authentic experience of theater is that very fact of being in the same room. And that's why, again, what things that we've been thinking about trying and trying to figure out how to do it, have these post-show conversations, right? And so, you know, post-show conversations by their very nature are often dominated by a few voices. We do our best to not have the post-show conversation go down that road, but, you know, people are people. And so there's right. people who have a lot to say, and then there's people who are there to listen and have something to say, but by the time they finally get to it, it may be too late. If we could give people the chance to participate in our discussions, like literally while they're in the room, but also in a digital format, you know what I mean? We are both in the room and creating a digitally rendered vision of that conversation that'll let even people who are a little shy participate.
You need like a tweet stream on a screen behind you or something like that.
We did that with this show, which was a series of interviews that two of our company's artists did. And so the show was about interviews and was about people sort of expressing their thoughts about the future and about questions about race and patriotism and religion and identity and all of these different things. And so we actually experimented during workshops, and there were different junctures of the play where you would see these characters that were interviewed, how they responded to questions like, with what groups or communities do you identify? Then the audience was asked the same question. They would tweet their response, and those responses were sort of presented as a collage on the back wall of the theater. You were actually getting to see what people in the audience were thinking in real time. It was in some respects successful, and in others, we had some challenges with the technology.
Like you said, it's a developing idea, and all developing ideas have, you know, failures and successes. It's often two steps forward, one step back in these things.
Well, and I guess all we feel strongly about at Epic is that the theater needs to be doing these experiments, and we need to be a leader with all, as you just said very well, all the pitfalls that comes with. We spend too much time in the theater trying to be successful, but we're basically just competing against ourselves right now. We're not actually putting ourselves out into marketplaces that aren't composed of people who have had significant arts education, which unfortunately is much of America. And so that's why when we pat our own back, we do so based on the number of people we bring to the theater who've never been to the theater or who didn't think that they would like the theater, who we've now made realize or helped realize, hey, Shakespeare's exciting. Shakespeare's cool. I mean, fundamentally, Shakespeare isn't some oldie, timey, musty, dusty thing.
For those of us who would like to take in the show, could you remind us where and when we can see Born with Teeth by the Epic Theater Ensemble?
Absolutely. It is going to be taking place April 16th through May 4th. And we are at the Pershing Square Signature Center, which is at 480 West 42nd Street. And tickets are only $25 and $10 for a student rush.
Jim Wallert and Ron Russell, thank you so much for joining us today in the State of Shakespeare.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm Garrett Vandermeer.
And I'm Jim Elliott.
And thank you for listening. Thanks for joining us for the State of Shakespeare podcast. We invite you to visit stateofshakespeare.com for more episodes, information about each of our guests, and the Shakespeare text you heard on the program, and much more. And we welcome you to join the discussion by liking us on Facebook. That's www.stateofshakespeare.com. Thanks for listening.